characters in dramatic form. First, Comfort, as adapted by Robert J. Landry. Second, Laughter by Gladys Milliner. Today's director, Howard G. Barnes. Music is arranged and conducted by Frederick Steiner. First of two happy thoughts for a hot afternoon. Comfort, an essay.
A quotation from Mr. Aldous Huxley. Comfort is a thing of recent growth, younger than steam, a child when telegraphy was born, only a generation older than radio, unquote.
Exactly. Comfort is new. It is not an American invention, but it is, of course, an American enthusiasm. Now, first example. You, sir, will you assist me?
Glad to cooperate.
By the way, do you own a yacht?
No, but I have a little shack in Nyack.
Oh, fine. Here we have a modern sofa, oversized, overstuffed, full of the soft, cushy feathers of contented geese. Now, sir, as part of our little studio demonstration of up-to-date American comfort, will you allow your person to sink into the sensuous embrace of this sofa?
Uh-huh. Oh... I'll have to get one of these
For the shack at Nyack. Stretch out full length. That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, in former times, no king, no duke, no actor could enjoy a sofa like this, which today may be purchased in almost any furniture or department store. What a picture of comfort. Now, sir, without straining a muscle, I think you can reach one of those mother-of-pearl buttons. Fine. That's remote control for the 12-tube radio receiver hidden in the mirrored refreshment bar across the room. Now we should get some soft music. Dependable, easy, effortless bedside radio music. Lullabies for grown-ups.
Does the radio shut off automatically if you fall asleep?
Aldous Huxley again. Further quotation. The padded chair, the well-sprung bed, the sofa, central heating, and the regular hot bath, these and a host of other comforts enter into the daily lives of even the most moderately prosperous of the Anglo-Saxon bourgeoisie. Unquote. If you please, sound of an honest working man in his bathroom. And some appropriate bathroom music. Solid comfort, very luxurious, very modern. Next, a group of businessmen at their country club.
Simon.
Yes, sir.
Same all around, Simon. And Simon, fetch that box of cigars. Superbo, superbos.
Directly, sir.
Nothing like room to stretch.
Yeah, you said it. Cushions, table space, ashtrays. Live longer this way.
Lolling, Joe. That's the secret. Where you find lolling, you find contentment.
Mr. Huxley points out that lolling is a comparatively recent art, which people were unable to enjoy in olden times because they had to be so confounded dignified. Man, were they dignified. Etiquette. Feudal system. You know, you can get tired just thinking about how dignified they used to be. It started with the kings and emperors. That's how the expression originated. Standing on one's dignity. Accent on standing. It was quite out of the question for the king of France to loll. The servants would never respect him. The king had to be elegant. Plenty elegant. It was only when he attended a session of Parliament, and that was not often, that the king of France ever lolled in public. On these occasions, he reclined upon the so-called bed of justice, That was an old French custom. In Parliament, the king reclined. A handful of princes sat. The great officers of the crown stood, and the small fry knelt. When you think about it, on a hot August day, it gives you something to be grateful for. And now to point up our point. We have here in the studio a replica of the old French throne as kindly supplied to Columbia Workshop by the curator of the old French Museum. I shall again request my working actor friend here to cooperate in another test. Sir, would you be so kind as to assume the posture of royalty?
Yes.
Dignified? Upright? Back straight? Head properly held? One knee, perhaps, slightly forward. A little more majestic, if you please.
Man, this seat is hard.
At first glance, one would think, writes Mr. Huxley, that there was and would be no causal connection between armchairs and democracies, sofas and the relaxation of the autocratic system. But look more closely, and you will discover that there exists the closest connection between the recent growth of comfort and the recent history of ideas. What was true of the king's court was true of the nobleman's household, and the squire was to his dependents, the merchant was to his apprentices and servants, what the monarch was to his courtiers.
Gee, they must have been stuffy. What made them like that?
Mr. Huxley reminds us that it was no accident. It began with the idea of divine right, not percolated down through all the classes. The king, the duke, the head of a business, the captain of a ship, the father of a family, had absolute authority over his inferiors. He was so busy seeing to it that they never relaxed that he never could either.
I pray thee, good husband, punish not our boy. It was but an oversight. He meant no insubordination.
I shall have respect in my own household. The boy did not touch his cap to me at the door. He shall be flogged.
Our boy is not well. His health is poorly. Surely thou may moderate thy judgment. Already he trembles for fright.
Wife, I do not punish him for vengeance, but for order. Each man in this world owes absolute obedience to his liege. A father may not suffer his son not to touch his cap in proper deference. No slight may be overlooked.
There could be no lolling, no failure to touch the cap in a world that cared more for authority and discipline than for anything else. The world needed to learn a little kindness in order to achieve a little comfort.
One remembers that in Germany of recent years, neither men nor boys were permitted to loll.
What is the charge?
Failure to stand in the presence of his corporal.
Let the man be flogged before his comrades.
Huxley points out the relationship of huge palaces to the idea of comfort. The nobleman, the prince, and the king inhabited places of grandeur corresponding to their social position. These were drafty old mausoleums.
Sometimes I wish the master was not a noble earl, so grand that he needs have rooms 100 feet long and 30 feet to the ceiling.
Aye, but these big rooms are only for show. The noble earl and his family huddled together when nobody's about in tiny apartments that can be kept a little reading.
Yes, but the likes of us must stay in these icy galleries and chatter our teeth. Oh, it's a burden to be in service to grandeur.
Aye, you get chilblains working for an earl.
The kings and the great nobles required their huge rooms because they operated them as theaters. The salon needed sometimes to accommodate a whole orchestra and a ballet troupe and hundreds of guests.
How
by the account, you make the powder dare superb, is it not?
Yes, my dear Baron. And the entrechat of the prima ballerina is certainly rare.
I suppose there's quite a lot more of the ballet.
I am given to understand that the dance goes on and on and on.
I feared as much.
His Majesty appears to be sleeping very soundly.
And the Queen is much taken with a new Colonel of the Guards, or she might end our ordeal.
How elegant life at court is, and how agonizingly uncomfortable.
Bravo, bravo! Ah, a splendid patois, is it not?
Splendid. Perfectly splendid. The prima ballerina's legs are by now absolutely purple with chill.
To appear before royalty is for a dancer to acquire rheumatism. Oh, a great honor, of course. Will His Majesty never wake up? He sits and dozes while we stand and stand and get colder and colder. Ah, the royal ballet is art at its zenith of artistry. Bravo, bravo! Oh, mine is cold.
The so-called good old days of the Bourbons were stiff, stuffy, shivery days. If there were no chairs to sit upon, if the rooms in great houses were as vast and as frosty as ice skating rinks, there was also in such circumstances a prejudice against and a conspicuous lack of facilities for washing. Men and women of the late 16th and early 17th centuries seem to have been as dirty as their barbarous ancestors. No self-respecting Roman would have come near them. It was the age of heavy perfume.
What do you suppose it was like in August of, say, 1786 or 1886?
You mean with everybody wearing all those clothes?
Particularly the women. What did they do?
Very simple. They fainted. Or they stayed indoors, pulled down the shades, and went around in, well, in less.
Yes, I guess we've got a lot of comforts to be grateful for nowadays. Happy thought. Comfort.
An essay on comfort, part one of Happy Thoughts for a Hot Afternoon. Today's presentation of the Columbia Workshop. The second set of happy thoughts follow immediately. Part two, Laughter by Gladys Milliner. The habit of humor developed early in America and has never languished. It was a marked characteristic of the pre-revolutionary Yankee.
Now understand me rightly. Genuine good humor don't come from just being clever or comic. It comes from feeling good inside and doing good outside.
In homely proverbs, in Benjamin Franklin's almanac.
That poor Richard, he's pretty good.
Ezekiel Smith, what do you mean by profaning the Sabbath with laughter? The elders
say... Oh, never mind what the elders say.
Indeed.
Oh, they still think life is stern and hard as it was on the other side. Why don't they sit back and enjoy what we got here?
But being merry is Satan's own design. The elders say that...
They're wrong, Marty. What makes folks fanatical and quarrelsome? Lack of merriment. Besides, there's a lot of hard sense wrapped up in what poor Richard says. Listen to this. He's gone and forgot nothing... but to say goodbye to his creditors. And then this one. Men and melons are hard to know.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and this. Keep your eyes wide open before marriage and half shut afterwards.
Now, Zeke, you're not...
Here's one I like. A sharp tongue is the only weapon that grows keener with use. Give an idle rumor to a woman
And she'll soon put it to work. He hit the nail on the head that time.
Now, Zeke, if you mean that
don't
I have a shot...
Don't take it to heart, Marcy.
The elders say that one should not...
But Ben Franklin had more to say. There was that time at Philadelphia when the fellow before him had put his John Hancock on a paper, making freedom legal.
There, that name should be big enough.
Yes, Hancock. His Majesty may be short-sighted on liberty, but he should be able to read that without his specs.
And then there was Sam, the Yankee peddler.
His language desires to please, and his words foreshadow a prophet. The history of the world's necessities is the history of his inventions. Go where you will. The everlasting Yankee you will meet, sharp in an argument and clever in a swap, tramping the world over with a grin on his face.
Yes, Sam the Yankee peddler, whose inventions would someday win a global war, plodding along over the rocks and rills of his native land, shoulders bent beneath his pack.
Well, I'll be shot if it ain't a Yankee peddler coming up the path.
Now, Pa, don't be slamming the shutters to keep him out. Oh, Pa, he may have the very things we need.
If you call furbelows what we need, I ain't giving my money to no Yankee peddler.
Oh, there he's at the door. Couldn't we just look? You know, you always liked the stories he brings.
Well, all right, let him in, but I won't buy nothing.
Yes?
Good morning, lady. Could I interest you in my wares? I got everything from pots and pans to patent pills for anything that ails you.
All bargains, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Because a woman will buy anything that she thinks a peddler is losing money on. But you needn't worry. The hardest man to cheat is the one that's honest with himself. So keep a sharp eye on all men, yourself most.
Oh, Paul, this is a beautiful piece of lace.
What did I tell you about furbelows?
Paul, sometimes you can be as stubborn as a mule.
No, lady. Don't say that till you understand what a mule is. Mules have more won't power than most folks have will power. They are very corrupt at heart. I've known them to be very good mules for 6 months, just to get to kick somebody. That is where they are smarter than some folks who go through life kicking at nothing. At least the mule has sense enough to take aim. And remember, you can't get ahead while you're kicking any more than the mule can.
Guess not, Marcy. Might as well take a length of that lace after all, just to show I'm not kicking.
Abreast of the frontier tramped the everlasting Yankee peddler, walking to the Mississippi behind the pioneers, bringing his good news along.
Laughing is the sensation of feeling good all over and showing it in one spot. Genuine laughing is the vent of the soul and is necessary for happiness. When you do laugh, open your mouth, throw your head back, hold on to your toupee, and laugh. Till your soul gets rested.
The Yankees' laughter rolled along the backwoods trails, along the rivers of the West, was taken up by the pioneers and grew greater in a rough and ready wit of the raw frontier, outspoken and irreverent of artificiality.
Americans love sharp things. They would prefer turpentine to perfume if they had to drink either. It's the same with their humor. An Englishman wants his fun smothered down, and he's willing to wait till next day to taste it. But the American wants his served up hot with red pepper sauce.
The American story grew as men discovered the bigness of America. Tall tales born of a country which they found too great for comprehension. Her mountains, rivers, heroes. The roaring 1840s really roared.
I'm a flatboat roarer from the Mississippi. Half horse and half alligator. I can wade the Gulf, leap the Ohio, and ride on a streak of lightning. Come on, all you flatters, and see how tough I am. I can whip my weight in wildcat. And if any gentleman pleases, For a $10 bill, he can throw in a panther. I ain't had a fight in 2 whole days, and I'm smiling.
A major strain of humor was provided by those Americans who came to citizenship via slavery and plantations. The humor of the American Negro was a deeply understanding commentary upon people, their manners, their brags, their desire to seem a little bigger and more important in life than perhaps they really were. Negro humor spilled over into that uniquely American institution, the minstrel show.
Gentlemen, be seated. And how are you tonight, Mr. Bones?
I was mighty shook up, Miss Underlock. It was mighty shook up.
Why? Did you see the excitement when the bank robber was shot?
Did I see the excitement? I was just outside the bank when he come by, and them 2 shots come accidental close to hit me.
2 shots? But I thought there was only 1 gunshot.
It might have been 1 gunshot, but I heard it twice. Once when it passed me, and once when I passed it.
There was one great president of the United States who exhibited in marked degree the God-given gift of laughter. And some of his political enemies were irritated at his jokes.
Who is this Lincoln, anyhow? Just a backwoods politician who has everybody voting for him because he knows how to tell a good story.
There are too many folks who think being born an American is the only way to be an American. It's like what Mike, the Irish immigrant, said when the fella asked him, "But Mike, you weren't born an American." And Mike replied, "Faith, no, I wanted to, but my mother wouldn't let me."
Yes, sometimes Lincoln was corny in his jokes, but more often he was poetic in his whimsy.
God must have loved the common people. He made so many of them.
Lifting the anecdote to a work of art and placing the backwoods oracle among the wise men of the world, expressing the philosophy of America in a homely drawl, Lincoln was touched with a bit of humor, even in his darkest hours.
But, Mr. Lincoln, we're bound to win. The Lord is on our side.
Well, I'm not so sure of that, Mr. Fry.
Don't you believe that the Lord is always on the side of the right?
Yes, and therefore it is always my constant concern to see that I and this nation stay on the Lord's side.
As a nation, America grew more united, flung its frontiers forward. The winning of the West took work and grit. The pioneer helped conquer it with laughter and fought misfortune with exaggeration.
I tell you, I had to move on. It was so damp in that river delta that I started growing watercress in my hair. I could stand having water bugs for flies and putting the catfish out at night, but I headed west when I took an ague that shook all the teeth out of my head, unraveled my coat, and finally shook the whole blame house down around me.
Exaggeration of dust and weariness, the freaks of nature that beset the prairie schooners as they sailed across the plains.
Sometimes I long so to see hills and trees I think will go back to my home in the east. But I never do. In this country, you can look farther and see less than anywhere else on earth.
At night around the campfires, they forgot their struggles and united in the comradeship of stories, fantasies of dangers faced by frontier folk.
There I was, being chased by 100 hostile Indians. I dodged into a canyon thinking to get away. But dang if that gulch didn't lead me to a wall going straight up hundreds of feet on all sides. There wasn't no way to get out except by a hole I come in by, and them Indians was pouring in through that.
Weird, what happened?
Why, them danged Indians killed me, of course.
Pride kindled the flaming oratory of the backwoods legislator.
Shame to the man who would change the name of our fair state. You may put your hand on the sun's face and make it night on earth. Shake yourself and rumble the mountains. Dip the Mississippi dry with a teaspoon. but change the name of Arkansas, never!
The tradition of the backwoods humorist has been carried on by the cowboy riding the range in his rattle trap, by the farmer plowing his row in a jeep. The old-time minstrel has become the MC of the radio, supplying laughs to a people who demand it. The sayings go on. The tall tales grow taller. The humor of Yankee Doodle of 1776 has been carried on by another Yank in another fight for freedom, by our recently wandering American, G.I. Joe.
It's very simple. To get along in the Army, you just got to remember three things. If it moves, salute it. If it don't move, pick it up. If it's too big to pick up, paint it.
The pioneer trait to laugh in the face of danger survived in the fighting Yank, taking his bits of slang and the grin he learned in a broad free land to the distant places of the earth.
Sign above a CB foxhole on a Pacific Isle.
Through these portals pass the fastest mortal.
And on a marine bunkhouse on Kwajalein Atoll.
Hotel Atoll. No drinks at all. No girls at all. Nothing at all.
American nurses had humor, too.
When those Jap bombers came over, I jumped right into the nearest wolf hole.
You mean foxhole, don't you?
Well, maybe a fox dug it, but there was a wolf in it when I got there.
Lanisi, American-born and American in spirit, with ancestors from Japan but bayonets from the USA, took the American gag along with them to the battlefields of Italy. No other group of American fighting men had higher casualties than the valiant Nisi, but they were American in humor. When they captured a German general...
So, the American forces are so weak that they must now call in Mongolians.
Mongolians, nothing. We're Japanese.
But how can that be?
Oh, haven't you heard? Japan has surrendered to the Americans and is fighting on their side now. Listen.
Told you no good.
Hitler, no good.
America, plenty good.
Bye-bye!
American humor expressed itself sometimes in delicious sarcasm, which the Germans didn't appreciate. An American radio mimic pretended to be Herr Goebbels.
The German army has accomplished the greatest military fact in its history in succeeding in disengaging itself from the enemy and crossing the Rhine back into the homeland, luring the soft Americans after them.
Yes, it's a good gift, the gift of laughter. It preserves sanity. It rests the soul. And the Bible itself says, a merry heart doeth good, like a medicine. The Columbia Workshop has presented Happy Thoughts for a Hot Afternoon, comprising two essays in dramatic form. First, Comfort, as adapted by Robert J. Landry, and second, Laughter, by Gladys Milliner. The musical score for both presentations was arranged and conducted by Frederick Steiner. Howard G. Barnes directed for the workshop. The cast included Gregory Morton, narrator for Comfort, and Byron McGrath, narrator for Laughter. Next week's program will be Sylvia Berger's Wilbur, the Psychoneurotic Automobile. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.